Welcome to Real Time with WLP. My name is Tamar Levy, proud WLP board member and co-founder. I'll be your host for this episode entitled Imposter Syndrome, Time to Change the Narrative. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce our guest, Dr. Carol Parker Walsh, founder and owner of Carol Parker Walsh Consulting, a boutique strategic advisory coaching, training, and development firm specializing in helping organizations and leaders unlock their innovation potential. Dr. Parker Walsh's multiple certifications and 30 plus years of experience as an attorney, executive leader, associate professor and dean, and social scientist have contributed to her becoming an award-winning master certified executive coach, personal brand strategist, TEDx speaker, and 3 times Amazon best-selling author. Wow. A sought-after international keynote, Carol is a fellow of the Harvard Institute of Coaching and a published member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Like WLP, Carol is passionate about empowering women, and I'm excited to explore one of the things that hold us back, the imposter syndrome. Welcome, Carol.
Oh, thank you, Tamara. It's so exciting to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you. So let's get right into it. Just to start off, I thought it'd be useful to set everybody straight in terms of what's the definition of imposter syndrome? What does it even mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So imposter syndrome was discovered by 2 psychologists who were studying women in leadership, specifically high achieving women. And Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes were their names. And actually what they found was what they called imposter phenomenon. And they found that in high achieving women, what they saw was that there was this kind of unyielding and persistent belief that they weren't, despite their achievements, that they either weren't as smart or as bright as their achievements would suggest, or that they were really fooling everyone, right? So that they were a fraud in terms of their work. So even though they were successful and were achieving and getting things done, they just had this belief that it was, they were fooling everyone around them, right? That it was a fraud. And so they found it very prevalent in the women that they studied. You know, upwards of like 70% of women or more were really suffering from it. And to this day, studies are still supporting that, you know, 1 in 5 women, and maybe even more, pretty much since the pandemic happened, that more and more women are like really suffering from it. So, and people like Justice Sonia Sotomayor, Michelle Obama, Sheryl Sandberg, you know, have all confessed that they have been plagued by imposter syndrome. So it's pretty common.
And the study you're referring to, that was initially conducted, I mean, that's like years ago, right? Over, I think,
yeah, it was in 78.
Ago, like in the 70s. So it's not new.
No.
And I can't believe it when I think about it that, you know, 50 years down the line, we're still talking about it. And there's still work to be done, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. There's work to be done. And, you know, they found, as I said, I think a recent KPMG study found that over 72% women are still studying from it, and that even men experience it, but women are experiencing it twice as much as men. Although there's some indications, there are also some other articles and things out there saying men just don't report it because it's definitely a more woman-focused phenomena. And just, you know, the masculinity of men may not make them report it at the same levels, you know, because they said they experience it. But I also think there's a difference into how women experience it and even if men are experiencing it. And from my perspective, it's because women, for the most part, weren't taught to be confident in themselves, right? As a society, you know, maybe there are some nuances in your home life. Maybe if you were in a family where they did teach you that, societally, it's just not something where women should be strong and confident and proud of their achievements and to talk about them all the time and to pat each other on the back and say, yes, you're so successful and wonderful. as opposed to the fact that we've more likely been taught to not talk about those things, to kind of play that down a little bit, that that's bragging or arrogant or boastful to really talk about your achievements and your successes. So, you know, we've societally been taught to kind of turn the dial down on our successes, which I think is a contributor to why so many women experience imposter syndrome. So then when we do have these successes, because it ha we haven't been taught to really own them and accept them and to talk about them and share them, we feel guilty about them, which I think is a contributor to imposter syndrome.
So let's drill into it a little bit more. I understand there are different types of imposter syndromes. There seems to be five specific types that have I been defined that we can identify depending on the individual. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really excited about that too. Valerie Young, who is a leading researcher psychologist in this work, developed five types of imposter syndrome. And the thing that I really like about that is that when you think of the word imposter or fraud, it's so laden with like criminal behavior. I mean, it's such a heavy moniker to
A big
bear.
word,
It's a very big word. And so what I like about her breaking down these five types is that it gives us a new language to use and may be able to identify ourselves into which of these types as opposed to this broad overarching idea of imposter syndrome. So the five types she talks about are first perfectionism. Well, the perfectionism, the natural genius, the soloist, the expert, and the superwoman. And just to give you a little of idea of what each of them mean, you know, perfectionism, most people kind of understand that. And the idea, if someone is struggling with perfectionism, is that if it's not perfect, then something's wrong with me. And pretty much all of them end with, then something's wrong with me, right? The natural genius believes that if it doesn't come naturally to me, right, if I have to study or learn something or spend a lot of time developing it, if it doesn't come natural to me, then something's wrong with me, right? That I should naturally know how to do certain things. The soloist, which I think is another big one, and I think a lot of women of color experience this one as well, which is that if I have to ask for help, that something's wrong with me, that I should be able to do it all on my own, bear it all on my back without asking for any kind of support or assistance. And that's another form. The expert is the one that believes they need to know everything. And so this will be the one that may tend to get multiple degrees, certifications, training. Like before they take a step forward, they have to get trained and understand everything about it before they feel competent or confident enough to go forward and step into whatever that next iteration is. And the superwoman sees themselves just basically, I would summarize that as comparison kind of syndrome, is that they just compare themselves constantly to everyone else feeling inadequate because they aren't doing what they're seeing. And I think, again, social media has really exacerbated that because when you look on social media or Instagram, it looks like people have everything together and they're living these beautiful, charmed lives. And if you're not living in that way, or you don't have the same success as a colleague is having, you think, well, then something again is wrong with me. I should be able to be all for all at all times. And so those are the five types of imposter syndrome.
Very interesting. So, how can we help women? This is the goal, right? With this podcast. Do you have tips to help them manage, depending on the type of imposter syndrome that they're experiencing? How do they manage their own imposter syndrome's feelings?
Yeah, that's really a great question. I think first and foremost, you know, I believe in, and the study suggests is that once you are experiencing imposter syndrome, it's something that is really hard to break out of. And it's because it's the narrative that we developed that's been embedded in our mind so for so long. So if you're in one of those five categories, you've been telling yourself this for so long that you really believe it to be true. So because of that, it's really important to understand where we may fall into one of those categories, right? And don't beat yourself up because you're experiencing it, right? Don't think there's something wrong because you're thinking this way. Understanding, as I said earlier, there's societal reasons that you may be experiencing that. We'll talk, you know, maybe in a minute about environmental issues that may be contributing to that. So the first thing is to really identify that, yes, I'm feeling this, and this is the type of imposter syndrome that I'm experiencing right now. And then you want to start normalizing conversations around your achievements. One of the things that I do with my clients is that I have them make a hundreds list, I call it. And what I have them do is to write down 100 accomplishments, achievements, things they're proud of, things they achieve just different throughout their life. It doesn't have to be in their
100.
career, 100, right? And honestly, no one has ever got that far. And a lot of times, people who are really suffering from imposter syndrome may make it to 10 and think, oh my God. And some can go further. But the idea of the exercise is to help to try to normalize this idea that you are successful, that you do have achievements, that it's you're not fooling anyone, that it's not a lie, that it really is real and it's something that you've really been doing all of your life. So that even if you reach higher levels of leadership in your career, that of course you reach these levels in your career because look at the story of your life. And then also to really commit to a daily practice of shifting your thinking around this narrative of imposter syndrome. Like let go that you're a fraud. Stop telling yourself these things. Stop reinforcing the language of imposter syndrome and just start seeing yourself through the lens of your accomplishments and things that you can do. Right. So those are the things that usually are the ways to try to unravel it and to diminish it. Like I said, I don't, it doesn't go away, but we can definitely turn the dial down so it's not so prevalent and so overwhelming.
So when we say change the narrative, it's basically we're telling women change your narrative.
Yes, 100%. Change what you're telling yourself, right? Because our thoughts impact our feelings and really control our actions. So if we're telling ourselves, I can't do this, I'm a fraud, they're going to find me out, then you're going to feel anxious, you're going to feel less confident, and as a result, you're not going to show up in your true power. So it's all, it almost becomes a reinforcing, self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You're telling yourself that it's true, and then you don't show up as your best self. And then you tell yourself, see, I knew I wasn't good, right? And so it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy. But if you shift the narrative that, well, wait a minute, if I they offered me the position, it means I'm pretty good at what I do. If I'm in this leadership position, it means that they trust that I can deliver results. If I was given a promotion, it means that they see something in me that I just need to learn to start seeing it in myself. Right. So just shifting the way you're thinking will change the kind of vibration of I'm a fraud to, oh, wait a minute, I have something to offer. I do have something to say. And doing things like the hundreds list can help reinforce that. And when you do that, you'll start showing up with greater confidence, which will then reinforce that you do have something to offer. I just want to say what's true is that we always, our brain always looks for evidence of what we believe. So if we believe that we're not, you know, we're a fraud and we're not powerful, then we're going to look for evidence to support that. But if we shift the narrative to say, I absolutely deserve to be here. I absolutely earned this. I absolutely worked hard for this. I absolutely have something to offer. Then we'll look for evidence that will support that to be true. And the more we have that reinforcement, the more we can shift the narrative around imposter syndrome.
And can you talk a little bit about, so you focused on the individual, right? We need to control our own narrative. And I love this tip about making our own hundreds lists. And maybe we won't get to 100, but we'll probably just be impressed by what we managed to put down on paper. And just a
Yes.
thought on that. Every year, myself, I do this exercise when I come to the end of the year and I look back on just the year that has passed and I do my top 10 list of what I'm most proud of, what I've accomplished. And I save that in my iPad and I look back year to year. So just doing that exercise too will add up, right? I've done it for 10 years.
Absolutely.
So I have my list of hundreds that
There you
I can
go.
refer back to.
Absolutely. And to make sure you do refer back to it, right? Because then as you're starting off the new year, if you keep referring back to that list, it'll keep reminding yourself and you'll give you that evidence that whatever this other idea that maybe you don't have what it takes, you're like, wait a minute, but here's evidence to the contrary.
But tell us a little bit. I mean, there's a component that is about the environment and the society that we live in. which still is filled with biases. So
Absolutely.
as much as we can work on ourselves, the environment that surrounds us sometimes obviously makes it even more challenging, right?
It absolutely makes it more challenging. And, when I opened today talking about just the societal pressures that we, have been, the societal messaging that women have been fed for centuries about themselves that we have indoctrinated, there's also the environment in terms of your working environment. And so, imposter syndrome, what it tends to do is to blame you, to say you're not worthy. But what we need to start doing is seeing where is the environment falling short and contributing to the biases. So if we start changing the environment, that also can be a contributing factor to changing this idea of imposter syndrome, right? So, the historical and patriarchal and sexist and other isms that permeate within societal organizational walls that we have seen and are beginning to dismantle at a higher level today more than ever before have contributed to this kind of, blaming women, right? So, we have this thing, this what they call it, the double bind, where, either you're strong and then they tell you're too strong, right? Or you're being too masculine, or if you're not strong, then you're too weak and not available. So it's like you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing, right? And that has been perpetuated in organizations for decades. And so again, a lot of that is shifting, but we have to understand that the environment could be one of the biggest contributors to how you're feeling. So if you're feeling some sense of imposter syndrome, I would encourage you to ask yourself, how much is my environment encouraging me, and how much of it is perpetuating or promoting me feeling like an imposter where I'm at, right? How much am I being supported, or how much am I being critiqued? How much am I being lifted up and rewarded, or how much am I being told that, well, if I could just change this and maybe not be this way and maybe show up more stronger, like how much of the messaging you're getting that's fueling imposter syndrome are you getting from the environment? And so in a lot of ways, the environment, instead of looking at yourself, sometimes we need to look at the environment to make sure that we're not indoctrinating. And we need to disassociate ourselves from what's happening there, as opposed to indoctrinating it and believing it and accepting it as true.
So a lot of self-reflection, self-awareness work is required
Absolutely.
to get.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, what is it, asking yourself things like, what is it costing me to sit within this way of thinking? How is it impacting me to be able to hold this idea that somehow or other, I'm falling short or I'm not quite capable to be able to do this work, right? One of the other things, it's funny, I'm doing this work right now with some of my clients about really speaking about the results that they deliver in their workplace, right? Really owning, what they bring to the table and the results that they deliver and how they're impacting that organization and contributing to its bottom line. And how I find that it's so challenging for some of the women that I'm working with to own that I do that, right? They want to kind of diminish it a little bit to say, well, I help and I want to do that, or I try to do that, or I work really hard to do that. But to get them to say, I absolutely do that, my contribution has contributed in these ways to this organization, it's really challenging to really push ourselves out of that. So we have to think about, like, what is it costing me to stay in that framework of mind as opposed to adapting something new, to really shifting our thinking and changing the narrative about our contributions and what we have to share so that we can own what we have as opposed to diminishing all of the brilliance that we bring to the table.
Those are great tips. So before we conclude, because we could talk about this, I think for a long time, but we want to be efficient with the use of our time today. But in the case where the conclusion is the environment is heavily contributing to the individual feeling a sense of imposter syndrome, I think there are a couple choices that someone could make in that instance, which is likely frequent. And if it is related to the company we work for example, we can, I believe, and tell me what you think, choose to, maybe not stay in that environment if we don't believe that it's really helping us thrive and grow, or we can choose to try and influence things in that environment and shift not only our own narrative, but shift the environment itself and flip the biases that are existing that are not helping. It takes a lot of work, I think, on the individual who attempts to do that, but it's possible as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And you're right. And I think it's okay for you to say that this is not the right environment for me and I'm going to choose something different. And that even is a different narrative than saying, oh, they treated me so horrible and I have to leave, right? So you're not putting yourself in a victim mode, but you're putting yourself in control, saying, this is not the right environment for me. I'm going to find one that values what I bring to the table and values my contribution to the organization. And to your point, on the other hand, you can say, listen, there are some areas in which I think we can make some differences. Maybe there's some naivete or just a lack of knowledge or information that maybe if we can communicate that and people can understand that differently, that maybe we can turn this around. And I would always say, if you decide that that's what you want to do in an organization, look for allies, right? Look for accomplices, right? Look for people who can support you and don't put all of that on your back to think it's your job to change the organization, right? You can contribute to supporting the organization, but you need the organization to meet you halfway, right? Right? You want them to say, absolutely, what can we do? And you can say, I need to partner with you for us to make this a better place for everyone who works there.
Yeah, that's another great tip. So, in conclusion, I myself feel like I've learned some useful tips out of today, and really some key takeaways is as an individual being self-aware, and being able to detach ourselves from what's happening, and what we can control versus what is in the environment that surrounds us is very important, and that and managing that narrative, or what I call the inner voice, is really, really also important in this case of imposter syndrome, and just continuing to remind ourselves of all our accomplishments, and not just remind ourselves, put it on paper. Make your list, like you said, because we forget. And if you can't reach 100, don't worry about it.
Yes, but
That
definitely try.
can help.
And normalize celebrating your success. I think that's the thing. We're so used to getting things done and moving on. We need to stop and say, look what I accomplished, and really celebrate it so that it gets cemented in our mind as evidence that we are brilliant and amazing.
Fabulous. Well, you are brilliant and amazing, Dr. Carol. And I want to thank you, no, really honestly, for your time. You're a busy lady. Everyone's time is precious. Yours is as well. And we appreciate your time at WLP, participating in this podcast with me. So I want to wish you all the best and lots of success in your journey.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It is my absolute joy to share and to be in your community. So thank you.
Thanks. And a big thank you to our listeners and WLP members. To learn more about Women Leaders in Pharma, I invite you to visit us at our website, Women Leaders in Pharma, or follow us on LinkedIn or Instagram.